This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, April 21st, 2009. I'm Caleb Brown. Meet the new defense secretary, same as the old defense secretary, but his press is better so far this time around. Is Robert Gates actually taking on the military-industrial complex with his modest proposed cuts in military budgets? Ben Friedman, Cato Institute Research Fellow in Defense and Homeland Security Studies, comments.
Secretary Gates had a press conference where he announced a bunch of cuts and additions to procurement programs in the Pentagon. This is just a suggestion. It's not official U.S. policy yet. It's what the Defense Department is asking Congress to do, because, of course, it's ultimately up to Congress what happens with the defense budget. And he announced, the end of F-22 production, which is the Air Force's next generation fighter. He broke up the Future Combat Systems program, which is this Army potpourri of programs, really, that they tied together that are meant to modernize the Army. He accelerated production of the Joint Strike Fighter, which is a fighter aircraft that's going to be used by the Marines, the Navy, and the Air Force. He canceled a rescue program, helicopter program in the Air Force. He canceled the presidential helicopter program, and made a number of other changes in the defense budget, notably also delaying the Air Force's bomber program, its production of its next carrier and cruiser, and probably getting rid of the its new destroyer, the DDG-1000, which the Navy doesn't actually want. So there's a whole series of big cuts to procurement programs, which have congressmen around the country running scared because, of course, a lot of those programs are built in their districts. So there's a lot of consternation about these cuts.
Given the changes that he's proposed, how does that affect this brewing battle you say exists between technology and manpower?
I think the cuts are largely caused by that. Basically, what happened was in the U.S. military budget, the cost of personnel has been growing extravagantly for a variety of reasons, one of which is pay raises and bonuses that Congress votes through and has been voting through increasingly in the last 7 or 8 years, which is natural during a war. We want to reward people who are risking their lives. And the bottom line is that the compensation for people in the armed forces has gone up by almost 50%, I think, in the last decade. And costs of healthcare, of course, like in the rest of the economy, are going through the roof. And meanwhile, we're expanding the Army and the Marine Corps based on the idea that we need to fight war, occupational wars, which are manpower intensive, which require a lot of boots on the ground. So you have more manpower, and it's more expensive. And so that's going to eat into the defense budget. Now, that wasn't a problem lately in the last few years because we've been growing the whole defense budget. So the top line of the defense budget has gone up almost 50% in the last decade. So it was delaying this conflict. But once, as the Obama administration said it's going to, you held the top line steady, although Gates, deviating from the rest of the administration a little bit, says he wants 2% real growth. OMB, Obama's OMB, says they want to just grow the defense budget by inflation. Either way, you're essentially holding the defense budget steady. That brings this conflict between the rising costs of personnel and procurement out into the fore. Procurement, research development, and procurement of new weapons is the part of the budget that has the most give. It's easiest to cut back on because you're spending a lot in given years. It's easier to reduce spending on a big weapons program than it is on force structure or something like that. So once they held the budget steady, it was sort of inevitable that there were going to be some cuts to research development and procurement of big ticket weapons items, and that's what's happening. So I would say that it's caused, by the growth of the cost of manpower and the growth of the amount of manpower, and by the end of growth of budget.
Congress is supposed to be deciding things like this. How is that going to play out?
Normally, you might say, well, Congress is going to steamroll this because, they are the servant by design of parochial interests. And the parochial interests in this case are a lot of jobs spread out around the country. F-22s, for example, are built largely in Georgia and Texas. So, Saxby Chambliss, the senator from Georgia, is a reliable supporter and defender of the F-22 program. And you can tell a similar story about any big defense program. But in this case, Congress already voted on a budget resolution, which is consistent with the Obama's recommended top line for the defense budget, which is $534 billion in the base defense budget. And having done that, because of the dynamics I described before, the growing cost of personnel and also the growing cost of operations and maintenance, they got to find cuts somewhere. There's too much future cost, or there's too many growing costs in the budget to pay for everything that's programmed without a big increase in the top line. And now that they've said there's not going to be a big increase in the top line, they got to find cuts somewhere. So they're sort of boxed in. And Gates, by providing a unified set of recommendations about how to meet that problem, is likely to prevail, because, you know, Congress has to find a compromise among all these parochial interests, because they have to find some cuts. And the most likely compromise, the easiest one, the path of least resistance, I think, is the one that's already been proposed by the Secretary of Defense. So I think he'll get most of what he wants. Not everything. They'll mess about on the margins here and there, but I think he'll largely win.
How does this debate change arguments of people who are trying to defend high technology in the military?
You hear a lot about the military-industrial complex, and one of the lines the media has taken in response to this announcement is that Gates is taking on the military-industrial complex, and I think that's kind of true. The military-industrial complex is basically the services who want to have follow-on platforms. So particular subgroups or sub-organizations within the services tend to focus on one particular military platform. So fighters want new fighters. Surface Navy guys want cruisers or destroyers. Submariners want submarines and so forth. So the services have an interest in new platforms. Contractors, of course, have an interest in building big, expensive platforms. And they farm the work out to usually as many congressional districts as they can to maximize support in Congress. So all those congressmen who then migrate to the relevant committees in Congress have an interest in those programs. And that's really what the military-industrial complex is, not a conspiracy, but a set of aligned interests. Now, so Gates, having gone after a bunch of procurement programs, I think it's fair to say, is going after the military-industrial complex. And then the question is, well, what political effects does that have? Now, There's an idea, a way of looking at political science or politics called pluralism, that says, look, you know, we tend to think of government debates as debates of ideas, the best ideas win. No. Pluralists say that's wrong. What really happens is interests compete, and ideas are just servants of interests. And now, Gates having gone after the military-industrial complex, it seems to me we've sort of created a new interest in going after the idea that we ought to be engaged in a lot of nation building, because one of the reasons these programs are getting cut is because we're putting more money into the Army and the Marines in service of this idea that we have to fight more Iraq-like wars as part of the war on terrorism, because failed states are havens for terrorism, so we have to reorder them, and that requires a lot of people. Hence, we need more Army and Marines, and we need more unconventional capability. So if people who are concerned about cuts to these big programs are paying attention, they'll say, well, the origin of these cuts is this idea. We're putting more money into the Army, and we're putting more money into unconventional capabilities. One way to deal with that is to say, hey, we don't need to fight these kind of wars to be safe from terrorism. And that argument has the virtue of being true. Now, a lot of us have been saying that for a while, but we haven't really gotten anywhere in Washington. But it seems to me that now that we have these new dynamics in the budget, maybe that argument will pick up steam.
Ben Friedman is a research fellow in defense and homeland security studies at the Cato Institute and author of the book U.S. Military Innovation Since the Cold War. You can read more of his work at cato.org.